The Brad Cessnat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
So tonight we're going to go in depth with someone that has sat in this studio on the couch through the years. He doesn't really fill the couch up as much as I thought he would because he's redistributed himself somewhat. Leaner, faster Christian Kirk, future first round pick. And I mean future like in April. And it's nice of you to come on in. The former SAGU and Texas A&M star. And you look great. How are things?
Thanks for having me. Things are great. Glad to be back in the Valley, back at home with my family. Although, I'm living away from them now, living down the street. But over there at Exos and, doing all the pre-combine training and whatnot. So things are great. Still blessed.
So let's go through that part of it first. We're in this space now where the combine is coming up shortly. What are you trying to accomplish right now? What are you working on daily? Yeah.
I think the most important part and one of the reasons why I picked going to Exos is getting my 40 down. And I think that's, obviously one of the most important things, when you go to the combine is running the best 40 time that you can because, at the end of the day, we all know that's what everybody looks at. Mm-hmm. And I believe Exos has one of the best speed training programs in the country. If not the best, and they've been doing so many things with us, and I can already feel myself getting better. We just finished out week three, so it's a whole 8-week program, and we still have so many more weeks to go and to be able to get better. And I'm just really excited about it, and the guys that we have in there, we're always pushing each other and whatnot. And, there's top talent all over the country. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of future first rounders in there as well, so it's a great atmosphere. And I'm just really in there, looking forward to just getting faster and getting stronger.
If you were to strap it up today, what are you running your 40 in?
I'd hope to say 4.3. That's the goal right now, high 4.3, low 4.4. And
where have you been so far at Exos?
Oh, we haven't tested yet.
You haven't tested yet?
No, not
last
yet.
Last time you were tested, you ran what?
I think it was in high school. It was like 4.42 or whatnot.
So you don't really have an idea.
No, it's been a while. So, I'm definitely going to go out there and, hopefully try to get in that 4.3 mark.
Okay, who are you working with? Some of the names of people that you're running against. You said a lot of first-round talent out there. Who are some of the guys you're training with?
We have one guy, top 10 guy, Denzel Ward, cornerback from Ohio State. We have another guy, Deion Kane, receiver from Clemson. We have a bunch of dudes in there that are just, straight-up ballers. And mm-hmm. It's just crazy to see all the talent. And, everybody's unique. Everybody's different. And and they're good guys. Actually, my former teammate and roommate Armani Watts is out here as well, and having him out here is awesome. And just to see him work, and we're used to working with one another, and just be able to push each other, it's real nice.
Christian, how have you gotten to this point? Mm-hmm. If you think back when you and I first started chatting, I joked about it a little bit earlier. He used to show up wearing the tank top, the gun show. Now he's got it closed down a little bit from Saguaro to Texas A&M to now going to the NFL draft. How is it you've gotten to this point?
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of like we were joking about earlier, I always come in here straight after a workout, kind of like mm-hmm. I did today. But I think that's the key. I think it was, all the work that I was putting in. I mentioned it so many times before, when nobody else was watching. And, all the extra work, whether we had workouts or not, it's, staying 30 minutes after, whether it's, rehab or flexibility or getting extra catches or whatnot, whether it's film review, just setting a vision. I've always had a vision of, where I've wanted to be. I've always had goals. And whenever, the going gets tough and, I'm hurting during a workout mm-hmm. or, something's just, adversity strikes, that's the only thing I play over and over my head is, what I'm trying to accomplish. And that's what just keeps motivating and fueling me. To get through that. So I think that's been the key is just being consistent in what I'm doing all the little things to try to be great and, just going out there and executing.
It's the whole idea of there's somebody somewhere in this world that you're going to line up against. You don't know who that somebody is. And you don't know where they are and you don't know how hard they're working. While you're out bowling or doing whatever, they're putting in the extra work.
Without
and
a doubt.
I think you've taken that approach since we started visiting.
Without a doubt.
You picked an agent. Let's talk about the business side because people don't realize there's a lot of stress. This is setting you up not just for this year but for years and years to come.
Right.
Give me the business side and what you went with.
Yeah. I ended up signing with Elite Athlete Management, who's actually local here. My agent is Zeke Sandu. you know, agent who's, you know, well, very, very well established. And
give him a shout out right there.
Yeah, I have to.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to. He's like family to me now, and he's like family to my family as well. And I think that was the biggest part, you know, as it was, you know, during the recruiting process as picking a school. And I'll say, you know, picking an agent and picking a school go hand in hand. They're pretty much the same. The process was the same. We had an agent day in the summer, and it was from 9 to 5 in the afternoon. We were meeting with agent after agent after agent for an hour long, and it's almost like speed dating. You know, me and my parents almost compared to that, and you just – it's tough because – you know, a lot of people talk about recruiters from schools, you know, they're like used car salesmen and whatnot. I mean, same can go for an agent. You just kind of have to, you know, see who's real. And I believe my parents are the best at being able to kind of see through that and find out who's genuine and who really has my best interests. And, you know, we narrowed it down to 4 going into the season. And then, you know, just kind of I put it in their hands because I trust my parents and, you know, how they're able to judge people and whatnot and their relationship and who they're comfortable with. And because I wanted to focus on the season, I wanted to have the best season that I could have and not have to focus about that. And, you know, once the season ended and we went into bowl practice, that's when I, you know, really was able to sit down and kind of reinvolve myself into that process. And at the end of the day, Zeke, you know, was just awesome to the whole entire process and really built a great, you know, foundation relationship with my parents and with me as well. And I truly, you know, look to him as family now. And he's been nothing but great so far and, you know, excited about the future. But, you know, it's definitely a difficult process because, you know, especially for a lot of kids that, you know, maybe do get wrapped up in that, that can kind of maybe waver you from focusing you on what you're supposed to do on Saturday.
What I've found through the years on the agent side, it's the agent that will look you in the eye and say, if this all ends tomorrow, if you get hurt tomorrow, I'm still there with you. Because I've seen that happen through the years where it's all great, and then when the adversity strikes, boom, gone.
No doubt.
You know, so it's the, what are you going to be doing when you're 35? What are you going to be doing when you're 55 and taking care of you in the future?
Right, no doubt. And that was one of the big questions that, you know, I know even, you know, my father asked was, you know, if Christian were to get hurt today or, you know, if somehow, you know, he's not the same player that he was, you know, are you still going to be there? Are you still going to treat him as you are now? And, you know, it's you know, it's kind of crazy and, you know, kind of how people change when money gets involved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the biggest things that I've had to get used to is everybody wants a piece. You know, everybody wants to reach in your pocket when money's involved. And so it's just, you know, they say all the time, you know, keep the circle close. And
that's right.
I really do take that, you know, to heart. And I really try to keep my circle close and not try to let too many people in. I've always kind of been that way. And, you know, I have my foundation of people that I always rely on, but never quick to get too close to anybody.
Well, and I think that's, I've seen that, you know. I'm not in your circle, but when you come in, you are laser focused on your job,
yes, sir.
Right? So, and I think that more and more kids, I say kids, when they go into the pro side of things, it's just different now. You've got a phone where everybody's wanting to blow you up, and you've got media on all platforms saying you're the greatest thing ever. And the minute the adversity hits, you're gone. And you've got to close the borders and see this person in my circle doesn't really belong anymore. You know, it's just changed.
No doubt, and especially with social media. I mean, social media has exaggerated so much, and especially when it comes to sports and football. And just like you said, you know, everybody's out there telling you they're the greatest thing ever. And then once somebody comes and gives you some type of criticism, they want to act like the world's over. And I've never been that way. And I actually appreciate, you know, when people, you know, tell me either I'm doing something wrong or I'm not the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I want you to give it to me real. And because if you're not, then I'm not getting better. And that means you don't have my best interest. So, you know, I think it's definitely tough. And, you know, like you said, with social media and whatnot, it's been crazy just kind of seeing how, you know, some people have handled the process.
Let's switch gears over to Kevin Sumlin. Talk about the coach now that he's the head coach of the University of Arizona Wildcats. What are they getting? How was Kevin Sumlin for you?
Yeah, I when you know, it was on the back half of the season and there was talk of, you know, him getting fired. You know, I made sure to voice my opinion, you know, during the interview and say that, you know, there wasn't another coach in college football that I'd rather play for. And I truly meant that. And, you know, number one, just the opportunity that he gave me as a sophomore, you know, kid out of Arizona with big dreams and wanted to go play in the SEC. And, you know, he took a chance on me and believed, you know, that I could do everything that I accomplished at A&M and was real from the get-go. We sat on a couch in my living room and he told me all the things that I could accomplish and he believed in me. And
was he right?
Oh, yeah. He was 100%
right. Dead flat, right?
Yep, 100% right. Yeah. And he was the same dude he was then until the day that he left. And he was the same way to all the other guys on the team and was a true player's coach. You hear, you know, a lot of people say, oh, he's a player's coach. Was truly a player's coach. You know, I was on the leadership council all 3 years while I was at A&M, and it was meeting with us every week. And you know, how your body's feeling? Do we need to take 30 minutes off here, or do we need to, you know, take a couple minutes off these periods to, you know, make it lighter on your body and whatnot? And just did it all in the best interest for us. And I think U of A is real lucky to have him, and I think he's going to kill it for them. You know, we're on the recruiting trail, and you know, for all the players that are there now, they're definitely lucky to have, you know, a great coach.
Okay, here's the tough one. You gonna help him recruit?
Will I?
Yeah.
Well, if somebody comes and asks me, you know, how is Coach Sullivan?
Now, did you grow up not liking U of A?
Oh no, I have no.
All right, no dog in the fight.
No, nothing.
No dog in the fight.
No.
All right. So if he says, "Hey, Christian, can you reach out?" You're there.
100%.
That close with him?
Yes, sir.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Kyle Allen, were you surprised he turned pro? A lot of people here were surprised. Mm-hmm. You're very close with him. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised?
No, I mean,
you knew it was coming.
Like you said, I mean, he's one of my best friends.
He's one of your best friends, sure.
You know, we pretty much talk every week during, you know, during the season. And I know this year was another tough year for him, and especially having to sit out a whole entire season and then him being able to get a shot. And, you know, some things, unfortunately, didn't go his way.
Right.
And, you know, as a competitor, he's one of, you know, the most competitive people I know. And not being able to go out there and compete, you know, kills him and killed me to, you know, not be able to see him go out there and play. But, you know, we talked about it, you know, about if he should leave or he should stay. And that's kind of how we are with one another. We hit ideas off of one another. And I know he's going to give it to me real, and I'm going to give it to him real. And, you know, he you know, went ahead and made that decision. And he's actually out there training in California right now. And super proud of him because he's definitely on a mission. And he's not willing to give up anytime soon. So I think he, you know, still has a bright future.
Couple other things. So in your heart's heart, this is the question I don't like asking, but it's the ones that fans always ask me. You should have asked him who his favorite team is to be drafted by. Mm-hmm. He's not going to give an answer on that, just so we're clear, but I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
So I'll put it this way to you. When you look at the board top to bottom, have you started to play through your mind when you're hearing you're slotted here or there where you might end up? Have you started that?
You know, obviously, like with social media and whatnot, you get tagged in mock drafts and here and there. And, you know, it's right now it's looking, you know, anywhere between 20 and 32. So the late first round, early second round. So, I mean, there's some teams. The Saints was the last one, Atlanta. I'm not sure of any of the others. Those are just the two that I saw recently. Like I said, I'm not trying to, you know, focus too much on that, but obviously it's you know, it's kind of hard to turn a blind eye to it and just ignore it, especially when you're getting tagged and whatnot. But, you know, going first round has been a goal of mine, shoot, from as far back as I can remember. And, you know, that's, you know, every kid's dream. And, you know, definitely when I got into college, I definitely wanted to be a first round draft pick. So if I fall out of the first round, you know, yeah, I'll be disappointed, but you know, I know whoever gets me is going to, you know, get a good, you know, true football player, and I'm going to give him my all to whatever program I go to.
15 wouldn't be bad. That's where the Cardinals
line is. I know. Yeah.
Oh, you know.
Yeah, I know that one.
You know that one.
Yes, sir.
I got you on that. How have you handled, it's early still, but how have you handled the draft nicks, the draft analysts that say pros, cons? Do you pay attention to that stuff? Is it stuff the agent gives you? Is it your parents saying, I can't believe this guy said you can't do this well? Because that's part of it now, too.
Well, I, you know, when you go and, you know, you're draft eligible, you send in your form, obviously, to the NFL. And, you know, they give you your grade back. And same thing, we just, late first round, early second. And then they give you your pros and cons. And, you know, majority of the cons were, you know, stuff that I've been dealing with my whole entire life. Not tall enough, you know, not optimal size. Questions here or there about my speed. And, you know, separation and whatnot. And
we have some tape against ASU that shows the speed, by the way. And just so we're clear about that, we have some speed tape.
Yeah, and it's stuff that, you know, obviously my height I can't fix, but, you know, everything else, you know, I know can, you know, speak for itself, and, you know, I'm not too worried about. So, you know, it's been good. And, you know, they give you, you know, little things as well as, you know, stiffness in the hips or, and, you know, yeah, or tight low back and stuff that, you know, it's kind of surprising that they see.
Really?
But, yeah, they're, you know, they're very analytical when they come to, you know, their scouting reports and whatnot. So it's just little things like that you can work on. So now I've been working on flexibility in my hips and my mobility and my low back and whatnot. So it's been good. You know, I got to keep my mom off of there and whatnot because she loves going on Twitter and reading up. We know what people are saying, and sometimes it gets a little worked up, but, you know, got to keep her off there. But it's been good. It hasn't been bad at all. And like I said, you just, you know, try to keep a blind eye to it, but, you know, sometimes you see it and you don't.
Don't poke mama bear.
Yeah, no.
Don't poke the bear.
No.
When you're done playing, you've gone through your career at Texas A&M, the education side, you still have football in front of you, but tell me about what you came out of the college end with for your degree and what you're working on when you're done playing.
Yeah, so I majored in university studies business, which is overall general business degree, and I got my minor in communications. And I think the route, I mean, the more and more I think about it, I'm not going to be able to come away from football. I mean, I love football too much, and I'm going to be, you know, want to be around it for the rest of my life. And
here it comes.
Yeah.
This is I want to sit.
Sports broadcasting.
I want to sit in this chair.
Yep.
How have I done in interviewing so far?
Great.
Have you done interviews? Yeah. I've done
some interviews.
Okay. What are some questions people have not asked you that you're like, come on, this is the question people should be asking me?
I mean, that's tough.
I don't want to do generic interviews. I hate generic interviews.
No, I mean, I think all your questions are great.
Is there anything else? I mean, is there some things I've left out?
No. I mean, we've covered it all pretty much.
So you want to be on NFL Network? You want to do the fantasy football stuff?
No.
Because that's coming.
Yeah, I know it's coming.
I mean, if I don't draft him, done.
I mean, I'd hope you would. But yeah, it's been great, and definitely be up there on NFL Network, and hopefully go to be able to travel and go to some game day sites and whatnot. Mm. So, you know, anywhere that's, you know, I've seen plenty of people. Obviously, you have the Tim Tebows of the world and whatnot, and plenty of other football players that have done it. And, you know, Tony Romo, I think he's doing awesome.
He's doing great.
He's doing awesome. And I love, you know, watching games that he's calling and whatnot, because it just brings a different aspect. I mean, you know, there hasn't been, you know, too many announcers that are able to bring that type of knowledge to the game.
Enthusiasm,
and
knowledge, not a grind. Tell me something I don't know.
Right.
And it's happening before the play.
Right.
Have a sense of humor.
Yeah. Yeah. He's doing awesome. So that's, you know, a little bit what it looks like. And, you know, obviously there, you know, might be some avenues that some other avenues I might take. You know, I'm still young, so I'm still trying to figure it out and, you know, what I really want to do after football.
So here's the thing on this. His first game should be Shapp against Saguaro this year if his team is on a bye.
Yeah.
You come back and you strap on the headset and you go at it, because Shapp is playing Saguaro, finally.
Yeah.
And we were talking off the air about that. It's not all about being drafted. It's about the little things, too, right?
It's definitely about the little
things. So tell me about that, when you heard the news, Shapp and Saguaro.
I was super excited for it. You know, that's one of the best rivalries in Arizona, if not the best, and a game that I love playing in. First 2 years didn't go as well for me.
No.
But, you know, I was able to get them, you know, in the end, you know, for my last season. And, you know, that was awesome. And, you know, because every kid knows each other. The schools are so close from one another. And it's a fun rivalry. I mean, I had so many friends that played on Chaparral and the Tyler Wileys, the Trevor Woods. I mean, it's fun. You know, you get to go out there and compete against them. But You got to hold the rivalry, and you know, it's a tough physical game, and you know, there's definitely going to be a lot of hype, you know, running up to it.
Yes,
and
there will be.
And you know, it's definitely going to be. I got to watch it. You know, whenever it comes on, I'm going to be watching for sure.
Okay, I'm going to let you go off this. So, if you ever want to come sit in this chair, and have someone sit in that chair, or sit up on that chair, you have an open invite.
I appreciate that.
Because you got to look at the future.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's just getting reps. You'll be great at it. You'll kill it.
For sure.
And you're going to kill in the NFL. So good.
I appreciate that.
Thanks for coming by, as always.
Thank you very much.
It's good seeing you.
Thank you.
Christian Kirk with us here in studio. We're back with more after this timeout. Let's talk Super Bowl. Looking ahead towards Sunday, the big game on Westwood One. On the radio side, Kevin Harlan, the voice of the Super Bowl on the radio with Boomer Esiason, Mike Holmgren, Tony Baselli, Ed Werder, Jim Gray, Scott Graham, Larry Fitzgerald, Tom Brady, and Kurt, our buddy Kurt Warner. I don't know how you're going to fit all those guys in on Sunday.
I don't
but
That's a lot of guys.
Man.
Maybe you're going to be a part of it, Brad. We'll have you on there. That'd be good.
Let anybody on here. My goodness. Kevin Harlan with us. As we look ahead to this Super Bowl, what intrigues you most about this Sunday's game, Kevin?
I think Brady against the front seven of Philadelphia probably would be the big headline for me, because it's always Brady. I mean, when you look at the few Hall of Famers, Brad, that he's really played with over the body of his career, I mean, I don't really even know, aside from Gronkowski, who you could put in a Hall of Fame type category, aside from Brady himself. He's got the head coach who's in the Hall of Fame, maybe the best coach ever, and then Tom. And then after that, what Hall of Famers has he played with on either side of the ball, but let alone on the offensive side? It may just be Gronkowski, maybe Moss at the end of his career. The point is, it's going to fall a lot on Brady and the system. And that system and Brady against that front seven of Philadelphia, to me, begins a pretty interesting conversation about where 52 will go, and then probably, you know, the other quarterback, Nick Foles, and just what kind of, you know, performance is he going to turn in? Will it be what he did against the number one defense in Minnesota? Or will it be the kind of Foles quarterbacking that we saw late in the regular season for Philadelphia once Carson Wentz was injured and out? So I think a lot of good storylines, a lot of significant individual performances will be key. And I think the game is going to be incredibly competitive and very, very close.
The Eagles will win the game if they do what?
If their front seven controls the short passing game, the rhythm passing game of Brady, where he likes to get the Amendolas and the Hogans and the Brandon Cooks and Deion Lewis and some of these positionless players, if he gets them in space and the blocking is able to assemble in front and they're able to do their damage, that will be, I think, the number one thing that front seven has got to guard against. I'm not a big fan of their secondary, although I think it's fine. Mm. It's the front seven, which to me is really the headline for their defense, front four in particular. But how those front seven guys handle that quick, you know, short passing game when Brady's throwing 7 yards to his left in the backfield, 7 yards to his right in the backfield, you know, the quick outs on the sideline looking for blocking. If that can be neutralized, New England's in trouble.
The Eagles will win the game if they do what?
If Foles is able to get his running game in the kind of rhythm where Ajayi and Blunt are able to do their sledgehammering type runs and then continually just pound that ball. But there's another kid in this equation who I think is pretty important too, Brad, and that's Corey Clement. He's a rookie free agent. He's out of Wisconsin. He's a great change of pace running back. He kind of is, he has a lot of different things he can do. He's a three-down running back, number one, but they usually use him just in passing situations. But orchestrating all this, of course, it falls on Foles. I'm not even looking at the line. I'm not even looking at his receivers, Aguilar or Jeffries. I think the tight end could be a big factor in this game for Philadelphia, but it all comes off of what Foles is able to do. Can you stretch the defense of New England, which I think will play a lot of man-to-man? The zone does not fit their personnel. They're a man-to-man team, and I think as a quarterback, you like when you're going up against man-to-man. And I think that's what Foles will try to hang his hat on against that Patriot D.
We're talking with Kevin Harlan. He will be doing the play-by-play of the Super Bowl for Westwood One coming up this Sunday with the Patriots meeting the Eagles. When you do a Tom Brady game, Kevin, how do you go about not over-preparing for a segment on Brady through the course of a broadcast? Do you know what I mean by that, where you're just giving so much about one guy because he's done so much? How do you compartmentalize and narrow it down to make the bullet points on Tom Brady?
Well, that's a good question, Brad. I don't know that you really – I think the story is so well-known, and he's the most talked about, the single most famous player playing pro football. Even when Manning was playing, Brady was still the guy because he was winning. And he's associated with Belichick. And that relationship, I think, is pretty unique. It took on maybe a different kind of a turn over the last 6 weeks when stories were coming out about perhaps discord among the owner Kraft, the coach Belichick, and the quarterback Brady, which they have seemed to dispel. But I guess where there's smoke, there's a little bit of fire, and there probably are some creative differences. But I think in what he does, when you get the press release from the Patriots, as we've already received, we got it middle of last week that they sent out to the media. I mean, they've got like 5 pages all about Brady. Brady in cold weather. Brady inside. Brady on turf. Brady on grass. Brady in his 20s. Brady in his 30s. Now Brady in his 40s. I mean, it is endless in what you could do. So I guess you were rattling off all the names of the guys we were with. I think it's going to be more incumbent and more important for the listener to hear the way they see Brady through their interpretation rather than me. I guess as a play-by-play guy in this, I got to be like on my game with reporting and kind of just write down to those kind of details and let them kind of fill in the picture, that blank canvas of what Brady means to them, what entices them about the Brady story, where they think the compass is pointed with Brady and what is the most relevant statistic they find, or the sentence after Tom Brady, comma, is, comma, blank, blank, blank. And that, I think, is what I'll rely on Boomer and Kurt Warner and Coach Holmgren and the others that are a part of this broadcast. Let them kind of handle that part of it.
Flip it around then. Is it the same for the Eagles? Because this is not the most well-known team. And you know this, Kevin, when it's Super Bowl, you have a lot of people in the audience who have not watched much football during the course of the year. So they're trying to inform them who these players are.
Yeah, football fans know. The average fan that will be listening and certainly watching may not know the whole story about Foles, and I think that will take a little bit of storytelling, but I think you've got to make it compact and kind of to the point, what he's been through, where he is, and what he's doing. And there will be stories associated with all these guys, from the kind of the checkered situation with LeGarrette Blount and how he's kind of bounced around a little bit and actually played for the Patriots a year ago, now is running for the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, there are little stories like that. I think a sentence you can put by every guy. I think at the end of the day, as the story develops and as you get more, focused and that lens begins to really zero in on a couple of really important, significant players in this story, then you can tell that story. So we're prepared with everything. And certainly there'll be some unknowns for New England, too, like James White last year, the touchdowns and the game winner. And people don't know his story coming out of Wisconsin, a middle-round draft choice and kind of a hidden jewel and brought along and so on and so forth. So you're always prepared with that kind of stuff. But you begin with Foles and you look at – the other thing, too, which I think is great, Brad, about pro football is that kind of like in the colleges, it's the school name and the school mascot which, begins to identify what they are. And the Eagles are a proud franchise that go back to the very beginnings of pro football. And they're one of the flagship franchises in pro football. It's been a long time since they have won a championship, Franklin Field, 1960, against the Green Bay Packers and Vince Lombardi and Bart Starr and Paul Hornung. I mean, you've got all these great, great stories about the franchise itself, very colorful stories. The first commissioner was the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles, Burt Bell. I mean, you can go on, and I think that helps color the background of what they are, where they've been, the lack of championships, and what it would mean for this city so starved for a championship. And make no mistake about it, Philadelphia is a football-first city. And then the other sports kind of fill in the gaps. But it is an Eagles city first and foremost.
Before I let you go, we're talking with Kevin Harlan. He will be doing the play-by-play of the Super Bowl for Westwood One on Sunday. I know you're focused on Super Bowl. You have all of your NBA commitments as well. I'm curious, if you don't have much, I get it, but I am curious your view of what the Arizona Cardinals have done here with Bruce Arians moving along and hiring Steve Wilks, defensive coordinator with Carolina, and now naming Mike McCoy, their offensive coordinator, the former Chargers head coach. Do you have a thought or two on those two moves and what's going on out here in Arizona? It's a time of transition, Kevin.
You're right, Brad. A good point. Coach Wilks was we did a couple of Buffalo games early in the season, and their coach McDermott left Carolina, but Wilks was the guy that replaced him as defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And he spoke very highly of him. And then we actually did a Buffalo-Carolina game early in the season dealing with Coach Wilks and came away very impressed. And I think he is the young, dynamic coach that organization is looking for, and I think he will fall right in line. I think it does help him significantly that he has a former head coach as his coordinator and Mike McCoy, who's a terrific man, by the way. He's a good man, first and foremost, and then a very good coach. And I like the fact that they're going to go in there with a fresh attitude. I think it's always good to kind of change and reboot. And you know, Bruce had such a wonderful legacy, and they came close, and they could see it, and they could almost touch it. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. But they've got the ball rolling, and the culture is in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And I think you have kept that momentum in the right direction with the hiring of the men you've just talked about. So I'm bullish on the Cardinals. I love the city. I love the support. I love the direction they're going. And I think they nailed it with him. Of course, you never know, and on paper, things always look good. But from what I know and my interaction with both, in particular Coach McCoy, I feel like they've continued their momentum. They've not taken a step back to make two forward. I think they've taken that step forward, and maybe two ahead is coming up sooner than we think. The quarterback will be huge, as we know. We know that that's going to be a very interesting position, and I think there's going to be some real nice free agents out there, actually. That's going to be a great story for the Cardinals, I think, with some nice parts already in place for that quarterback to use once they get their guy.
Always good to hear your voice. Appreciate the time and visit, as always, Kevin. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to be on with someone like you, too, Brad. A lot of respect for your work. Thank you so much.
There's Kevin Harlan with us, Westwood One. He will be doing the play-by-play of the Super Bowl that comes up this Sunday. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics, all the sports, the build-up, the buildings, the GCU standing for Grand Construction University, because that's what's going on. That was a line from my daughter, who was a student there, because they have the softball and baseball facility construction going on. We'll get into that in a little bit more. This will be a potpourri today, which I always like doing with Paul Coro. Always good to catch up with Paul with GCU Lopes. GCULopes.com, you want that as your official title, like senior writer? Do you have like this? I want to make sure I get this right.
That's beautiful. Right there. You nailed it.
Senior writer, senior man of everything GCU.
Wordsmith.
Wordsmith. I like that. Talk to the Lopes with Paul.
Was your daughter at the proposal the other day, the on-campus proposal?
No. She graduated, but she went back. It did.
Oh, okay.
It did. What? Tell me about this.
Well, some guy put up a, he's a grad student, he's actually a really successful one. He started a longboard company that's doing really well, and he just put up a sign in the middle of the promenade, one of the like places in front of the student union, that said, proposal, you know, 435, you know, with some statement about love forever, kind of something like that, and nobody knew really what it was, whether it was a real proposal or not, and shoot, there was about 1,000 kids wound up gathering in a circle around, and he walked his girl out in the middle of it and got down on a knee and broke out the ring, and she said yes, and everybody went crazy, and
that is awesome.
It's been pretty much on every TV station since then.
That is awesome. I should be looking at this. What I do want to start with, that's a good story. Paul Coro with us, GCU men's basketball. So I'm at the Arizona State game the other night, and I have people that are coming up to me saying, can you believe that they lost? And I said, yeah, I can believe that. Have you guys ever been to Utah Valley State? One, two, this is a team that, in my opinion, when I watch them play, and I do see most every game, still trying to figure some things out in terms of combinations, lineups. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it was for anybody paying attention, like you said, to what Utah Valley's been doing. They're definitely a program on the rise. There's certainly some parallels between them and GCU and the way they've built up their their university and their facilities recently and having an ex-NBA guy as a head coach and Mark Pope. And mm-hmm. they got a bunch of transfers that they had four guys that sat out last year as D1 transfers. And all of a sudden they're playing like their center is a 7-foot guy from Oklahoma. So they had some difference makers on the floor. GCU is right now just, established itself as a strong defensive team most of the time. And the offense has been inconsistent, to be honest. And they've, they jumped out to a 14-2 lead Saturday and looked like they were just going to mow them. And then the offensive struggles settled in. And that's been one of the common themes of the season. Haven't shot the three like they expected. But defensively, it keeps them in most games. And so they've won just about everything that they should. And they're still looking for those marquee wins that can, put them in play in the WAC, especially, like going into Mexico State would be a big one, and they'll have to get Utah Valley back when they come to GCU Arena.
Okay, so, I'm talking to Paul Coro, who's covered basketball at the highest level. So when I say this, I don't mean this lightly. You look at this team, okay? What is, in your opinion, needing to get fixed before they get to Vegas? That's all I really care about at this point, is these games in late January, early February. By the time you get to mid-February, you better not be searching, right? So if you and I are being straight with each other at this point, what do they need to get fixed?
Well, I think it started. The offense is definitely the thing that needs the most attention, and they put a focus on the interior mid-season. So that was a change on the fly that they made, which isn't always easy when you're changing your offense. They didn't overhaul the offense, but they tweaked it. So they're going inside and out and using this Alessandro Labor, their 6'10 center from Italy, more. And he's had 20-plus four games in a row, and he's grabbing about 7-8 rebounds a game during that stretch and shooting at a real high percentage. So they went in there more. A lot of that was because they weren't shooting the three as they expected, and, hope that opened up the perimeter a little bit more. But the big thing, is, they came into the season expecting Casey Benson and Joshua Braun to be the backcourt that carried them. And we've seen Casey Benson recently really get back to the kind of play from him at Oregon, where he's extremely efficient, playmaker, assist to turnover guy. He went through a three-game stretch where he had 25 assists and one turnover. But Joshua Braun started finding his three a little bit more, but they still, need to find his shot and get him involved. He's their leading scorer. He was preseason player of the year, and he fouled out with one shot at Utah Valley. And so that's something that, you certainly wouldn't expect.
That can't happen. I mean, that's about the only way to put it, right? I mean, how's Dan handling this season from your view? 15-7.
Well, as you know, Dan Marley's an emotional guy, and he's totally vested in this. He passes up on a lot of things to dedicate himself to figuring out this team and how to make it better. And it's not just him; it's Todd Lee, it's Chris Carlo, and T.J. Benson. The whole staff works really hard, and so sometimes Dan Marley wears his emotions on his sleeves because he cares about this team and the players individually so much, and he shares that, and you can see him on the sideline. You can see him turn different shades of Lopes purple at times because he's so invested. But the great thing about when he does that is he also, it's gone. He lets it out and he's good with the guys after that. After a win, he'll express himself the same way. He'll ask the guys if he wants them to be straight with them, and then he'll tell them his criticism rather than just saying good win, because their goal is March. They got to get three wins in a row in the WAC tournament.
Right.
That's the goal.
That's
they want to win every game and hold home court and win the WAC before then, but the big goal is to win three in a row in March, and they're building toward that.
Yeah, and that's been my point on this whole season. It's, look, you can get all excited about games in November and December and figuring things out, but in this conference, it's no slight towards anybody, but there's only going to be one team that goes to March Madness. It's just how it is. And if this is the goal this year, then you got to get some things. You got to go through some growing pains. And you have home games this weekend against UMKC and Chicago State. So Thursday and Saturday night, what is it you want to see? Is it just the offensive consistency against these two opponents?
Yeah, and I think they slipped a little bit defensively Saturday too, and that they've certainly established themselves over the long haul of the season as a good team with high effort and on that end. And, a lot of it's, the ball screen stuff and one-on-one, keeping guys in front of them. They got a lot of foul calls Saturday. Some of them maybe they don't agree with. Some of them they deserve. So a lot of that will be cleaned up against these two teams. They you know, beat them both on the road. So they would, of course, expect to beat them here. They got three games before they go back to New Mexico State. And you'd like to see them get on a roll and get that offense flowing again. And, you know, they've established themselves inside. They can get Bron Moore involved, get his shot going. You know, Robert Blumberg at times can be a big boost off the bench. The big difference between, you know, when they play well and their losses is sometimes the bench. You know, they didn't get a lot of production outside from the bench on Saturday outside of Fifi Adu. And so when they do, there's no let off when the starters come out, and that makes a huge difference for them.
Talking Talk to the Lopes this week with Paul Coro, all things around GCU. On the women's side, Nicole Powell's team has won 8 of their last 10, 4-2 in WAC play. She turning the corner here pretty quick, Paul, in year one?
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be one of the best turnarounds in the nation for women's hoops. They were 2-8, and now they're 10-10. And they're tied for second in the conference. Bree Mobley, a senior, did a feature on her last week on GCLopes.com. She's one of the best players in the conference. She certainly should be in the running for player of the year. She's the only player that's been ranking in the top three for points, rebounds, assists. And she's a really unique player, too, because she's got a mid-range game.
A mid-range game. Come on. That in basketball, yeah. Who knew?
It's she's really actually fun to watch. Sometimes she makes the moves I think that the men's side could use. she split a zone one time and against a 2-3 zone went round the back between the legs from the backside and then hit a runner over the backside defender. Basically beat three people with one move and wound up on the SportsCenter top 10. She's got that kind of game and it's really effortless. You know, Nicole Powell, the first year coach who grew up here, went to Mountain Point. Stanford great, WNBA great. She compared her to Roger Federer because she's got such an ease to her mid-range game. And the weird thing is that, not weird, she works at her game, but she's started taking threes the last four games, and that really changes everything. But they're more than her. August Touchard's been a really steady influence at the point guard spot. She's another, kind of like Casey, a high assist to turnover person and a great leader, very steady. And then Jessica Gajewski is another person who does hit the three. She had 7 threes last game. So they're making their name. They can certainly make some hay in the tournament because they've already shown, you know, with the way they've played here earlier in conference, that they can beat everybody. The teams they lost closely.
Hmm. Before I get you out of here, the latest on the GCU softball and baseball facilities, I mentioned that off the top. I think Haley from our staff's wanting to go out next week. I think she's meeting with Coach Stankiewicz about the baseball stadium. What's going on there?
Well, two programs that have had success and won the WAC in the past are getting brand new facilities, both opening this coming February. This first one will be softball. They're opening on February 8th, brand new, gorgeous softball stadium. And then not only do they open February 8th against Montana, but then on Friday night, Oklahoma, the national champs, will come in and play there on Friday night. That'll be on your view, too, but also be a big attendance night, you know, 1,200 seat stadium. Now there's shading out there for fans. They can get concessions, you know, all the new amenities, restrooms and all that. And then baseball will open the following week, and TCU is coming in for that opener on February 16th, and they'll be here for a 3-game series. The tickets are free, but they're asking for people to request them on opening night. That information will be on GCLopes.com coming up, and it's pretty much complete. It's about 3,000 chair backs in the stadium with a berm along the right field area, a lot of entertainment in the area. People driving down 35th Avenue can see how it's grown with the overhang, and the lights are up, and it's really a gorgeous place. And the great part is it's right where Brazel Field's always been.
So yeah.
Brazel Stadium's always been, and now it's Brazel Field at GCU Ballpark.
That's cool. TCU, that means Eric's going to hit you up for free tickets, but that's just...
Yeah, I gave him a heads up on that a while back, so he knows it's coming.
It's one of those deals.
It'll be the battle of the purple logo.
That's right. Anything else on campus this week before I let you go that you think people should be aware of?
Well, men's volleyball is really making a big bang. You know, they're probably our highest-ranking national program right now. They cracked into the top 10 for the first time in school history. They've played, you know, some top 10 teams really well. They're one of their only losses was you know, in five sets by 2 points in the fifth set to UC Irvine, number six team. And the fun part is they're getting over 1,000 fans a game in Antelope Gymnasium, which if you've been in there,
yep,
that place is rocking when you get that many people in there. So a lot of people are finding out Matt Worley, the head coach, has done a great job. And they got an exciting brand. They got 9 seniors, so they've really built toward this moment. And then soccer, men's soccer, had 2 guys drafted in the MLS draft, and they're both with their teams right now, Amir Sasaverovic and Nikki Jackson, who you've had on the program.
Yes, I have.
Amir went to Dallas, and Nikki's in Colorado, and they're both in training camp right now.
That's good. That's good. Good hearing your voice. Thanks for all the info and the entertainment of talking to you for about 15 minutes. It was good. Thanks.
All right. Always good to catch up with you, Brad.
You got it, Paul. There's Paul Coro, GCULopes.com. That is Talk to the Lopes for this week.